To have a good harvest, one must plant good seeds and must also use the right kind of fertilizer. The carrots have grown large and firm. How good they will taste.
Well, welcome back to the Backyard Gardens podcast, everybody. Yeah, we're here for another fantastic gardening conversation today as we cruise into spring. I believe we've already passed the first day of spring at this point, correct?
No, first day of spring is like today, I think.
As for when this releases.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So happy spring. How's that? So, couple things real quick. So this is going to tie into our episode, which we didn't even really plan this way, but it works out pretty good. Obviously, we're going to talk about direct sowing seeds for summer. And on that note, we have a seed shop opened up. You can find the link below where we're selling seeds for this year, and they're all direct sowable seeds. So that's how we're going to ease into this. So if you guys want some seeds, check that out. Because in celebration of us, and I mean us, I mean Batavia and myself and the Backyard Gardens podcast, we have just...
And Leonard.
Sorry, Leonard. You don't really count, but you know. We have just hit 1 million downloads. So in that... Go ahead. I know you're hovering.
I wish I would have known you were going to announce it because I would have had my cowbell.
So we're going to do... we're going to have a sale on our seed shop, and it's the code is 1 million, spelled out, no spaces. And you get 10% off, and it runs all the way until... the first day of summer, and we're going to throw in a free seed pack for you. So check us out and enjoy. And I just want to put this in perspective for you, Batavia, because it's just a number, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's 1 million with the actual one and then million spelled out. Maybe I'll make them both so it's not confusing. Imagine 1 million people standing in front of you. That's how many people have downloaded our podcast and listened to us talk about gardening. That's insane.
I can't wait to tell my mom that 1 million people have listened to me on the radio.
Yeah.
Because that's how I have to explain to her.
What's a podcast? It's a radio show. So thank you guys, everybody. We truly, truly are thankful for you being here. And don't forget, you can also, I'm going to hit you guys up. You can become a subscriber or a patron and help support the show. And then that'll help keep us going longer because we're just getting started. That's all I got to say. Uh-oh, Batavia looks like she's about to say, actually, I got bad news.
No, man, it's super exciting. Like... gosh, talk about stumbling into this and here we are.
Yeah.
Like 1 million downloads later.
I remember last summer getting kind of close and watching it and being like, all right, calculations are we will hit 1 million around this time. And we've come to it earlier than I remember saying. And it's just shocking. I can't believe it. So I'm thrilled that there's people that have listened to us that much. And hopefully... we've helped them that much as well. So it's a beautiful thing. Beautiful, beautiful thing. All right, enough of that.
It's a beautiful day.
Even though we're happy about 1 million downloads, the listener's probably like, I just want to hear about my seeds. So let's get down and dirty. Are you a big direct sower? I can't remember.
It's my preference.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if I had my way, I'd direct sow, you know.
Everything.
Anything that I don't need that head start on.
Yeah. Perfect climate for me would be, I think I'm going to grow peppers. Let me go stick them in the ground and then just grow them, you know. But that's not how it works. Through this conversation, full disclaimer, we are going to be referencing our seeds a lot because they were designed for direct sowing. You know, just to make it simplistic. But there's a lot of seeds that are really recommended for direct sowing, but don't have to be direct sowed that we will talk about as well. I think there's a misnomer there, and the difference comes in is the timeline in which you start them. So we'll talk about that as well. And this goes for all of summer, you know what I mean? And then even parts of spring, but I think we kind of wanted to focus this one more on summer. So mm-hmm. we'll do that. And then at the end, we'll just go through a small list of spring because we know it's the first day of spring, everybody. We are aware. But it is time to start thinking about summer already because a gardener is always looking forward. Remember that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. My number one advice for anybody getting into gardening.
Yeah. So remember, it's our goal this year to get this information to you ahead of the time that you'll use it. Most of us will need it. So, you know, for me, I am not direct sowing summer things today.
No.
As in the day that you're hearing this episode.
But you're prepping.
I'm still a ways away.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and to a full honesty moment right now, that's the hardest thing about this show is trying to get the information out in time for people mm-hmm. to apply it. I know when we first started, we were like behind.
Just in time. Just in time.
Yeah. And it's like, man, most people probably already have their plans made. And it's really difficult for us to sit here and talk about this stuff ahead of when you hear it because mm-hmm. our mental space isn't even there. So it causes a little bit of confusion. But my goal for this year, and I think Batavia's as well, we discussed it, was to try and get this information out ahead of time so that people can be planning. Because typically, I'm looking a season to a season and a half in advance in my garden.
And I'm looking there, but you know, I don't have my CNI glasses, so I really can't focus that far ahead. Yeah,
you're two years off from that. We're a year down,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. But it's also, so when we bounce back and forth on these episodes about, you know, the topic, when we want to record it, the thing I'm always thinking about is like, do you have the headspace as a listener yeah. to hear it? You know, do you have ears to hear in that moment? And so that's the kind of arm wrestling we do internally, I think. But the key here is, and this is one of the things that I didn't realize would be as hard as it has been. So not only do you have these crops that you have across seasons, so spring, you know, some of us are pulling things out or planting things for spring when you hear this. Some of us are planning for summer, but you're going to have things at various sizes no matter the season that you have in your garden, most of us, yeah. right? While you're now also direct sowing things. So while, again, releasing this episode about direct sowing summer crops in March, we also want to make sure that you leave room in your garden for those things, right? You know, so you could always, you know, pinch in a seed, but are you leaving enough room for that thing to grow?
Yeah.
Where you've kind of, if you're squeezing it in, so.
Well, and that's something yeah. that like I do a little bit different is mm-hmm. I try and focus on when am I going to get that crop out of that garden so I can create space for it. But mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. a real tricky game. That is truthfully an uphill battle for me every year because yep. nothing ever goes according to plan, ever. I was just looking at my broccoli bed and I was looking at it and I was like, boy, oh boy, we've got for the next crop to go in at the time of recording, I've got about 5 weeks. It's going to be close, buddy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, if I can get this, that I might be onto something, you know? So it's just each year, I'm just kind of working towards that goal.
And this is where, I think it takes years and years. So some of us may have already gotten there, but it takes years and years and paying really close attention to when you planted something, when you're harvesting, is the weather this year similar to the weather it was in those previous years? I was just chatting with Young Ben before this episode, and I have, as of the recording, which, you know, we're just a couple of weeks early as far as when we're recording it, I have cilantro that's volunteering
yeah.
in my garden in Chicago. And it's volunteered every, you know, I let it go to seed every year. And so it just pops up everywhere. But, you know, that's early for me.
Yeah.
But it's also telling me if it's volunteering in Chicago, chances are I could be direct sowing cilantro.
Take note.
Again, not a summer crop, but
take
just
note.
As an exercise. Mm-hmm.
That's a really good time to like take that note and be like, you know what? Earlier. Because I did that mm-hmm. last year. I put cilantro in January, and it was amazing. So, you know, just each year I know. And you know what's funny? I took note of it, and I remembered it, and I told myself, and I still didn't plant it. But that's my problem. you know, and plus, I don't want a whole row of cilantro. One plant does me just fine. Mm. But I can hear somebody right now, just get to the seeds. Fine, we will. How's that? I'm going to go with the broccoli bed. So on the what we have two different varieties that go in this, and so right behind my broccoli, I'm putting squash plants. So we've got Ford Hook zucchini, and then we did a white bush scallop squash, and those are really good to direct sow. The big fat easy seeds to see, man. You know, no issues whatsoever. So we can plop those in. Those are seeds that I can direct sow, but I can also start them early. And if I start them early, I start them about a month ahead of time. I don't want them to grow too long inside. So that's a good, you know, starting point for me. And then I can get them in the ground and start to combat the ultimate battle with the little bastard. And if you're new to the show, that is the squash vine borer. We all hate it more than anything. Batavia is rearranging her office right now. So,
the Ford Hook, just if you're interested in favorites, the Ford Hook is my favorite. I'm sorry, the scallop squash, the white scallop squash is my favorite of the squashes.
Is it? Mm-hmm. I knew, actually, I don't know why I act surprised, because that's why we picked to grow. Is it really?
It's
well.
It's unique. It has, you know, a definitely unique taste. I'm looking at it to say, you know, I'm always roasting things. So it's really, really yummy if you put a little oil on it and roast it. So yeah, it's one of my favorites. And I don't think there was an argument there.
No. You know why I like it is because when you cut it open, there's more quote unquote meat than a yellow squash. Mm-hmm. You know, when you cut a yellow squash open, sometimes it's like mushy in the middle. You don't get that with those. So that's why I like growing them. And they get a little bit bigger. So, you know, and then the good thing about direct sowing those too is once they start producing, then you can go in and start another batch right behind it, direct sow. And then by the time it's done producing, you've got another plant waiting in the wings, or you can start them in little pots again. You know, they'll produce for about a month or so. A lot of times the squash vine borer is going to get them. And then you can just replant, because remember this, everybody, look up in your area, the life cycle of the borer, and you will be able to plant around it. So if you get it in early, you can get a harvest, and then you go through the battle of it, and then they will not be as prevalent, and then you can replant again and then get on the back half of that. So you just got to weather the storm, essentially, with that pest. Unfortunately, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, and I think for, you know, the Ford Hook, I'm a fan of any of the Ford Hook, you know, kind of that series of different veggies. And the zucchini, it's not your deep green, right? It's a little bit more interesting looking, yeah, if that makes sense, when it comes to the actual squash that it puts on. The white scallop, it grows pretty upright as well. You could use like a tomato cage. Yeah. You know, so it doesn't take up as much space as some of your other squashes. So it gives you some options. And yeah, a fan of both.
My mom will not try the scallop squash. She only wants yellow squash. And she planted it next year. And she's like, what are all these white grubs? I'm like, oh, those are squash vine borers, mom. She's like, I can't grow any of them. I'm like, yeah, I told you. You got to keep planting them over and over. So, you know, bless her soul. If she could just get that under control. But yeah, so those are the two that we're selling that are just great and perfect for direct sowing, I think. But you can also start them a little early and keep some going in the wings for the future.
Agreed. So next up I have is your classic straight eight cucumber. I'm actually doing some different things with cucumbers this year.
We fought over this one too, by the way, just so y'all know.
Yeah. Well, as long-time listeners knows, you know, which one wasn't even on, you know, the list to consider when it comes to my buddy Ben. And
National Pickling did not make it.
Yeah. It wasn't even on the short list. But yeah, it's a classic cucumber. Like, you know, if your cucumber harvest do well, it is going to be, you know, you're going to be giving them away. Mm-hmm. This is the funny one where we talk about, like, when you're in the stores now, I don't know if it's always been that way, I just didn't pay attention, but when you're in the stores now and you see in your garden center cucumber plants. Like, they'll give you 3 or 4 in a lot of places in, like, you know, a round type, 4-inch type pot. Mm-hmm. But they have, they don't even have true leaves yet, no, in most cases. You know,
same with the squash. And, I mean, they're a couple days old.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this is where we, you and I talk about, you know, it's, and I feel like some of these things for me have transplanted well. My preference, again, if I didn't have trouble with some pest, you know, primarily the roly-poly eating seedlings as they emerge, I would be direct sowing them. I'm going to do a mixture for cucumbers this year. I'm going to direct sow some, and I'm going to start some indoors. And it's going to be kind of in that order, direct sowing them first, and then as a backup plan, having them started indoors. Really reasonable. You get, you know, a bunch of seeds, so you can afford to kind of plant a few more than maybe you would, or maybe even you need.
Yeah.
I've been off and on, which I think is pretty typical when it comes to what we're doing with some of this produce. You know, I've had on years for pickles. I've had off years for pickles. Last year was an off year. So even though this isn't a named pickling cucumber, you can absolutely pickle these. I'm going to be doing more refrigerator pickles, which I did like 2 years ago, which I really loved.
Yeah, I so the one that I wanted that I you know, I let Batavia have was the Boston pickling. That's like my all time favorite. I've actually never grown the straight eight, but I'm going to grow it this year because, you know, I want to represent what we have. And I'm curious to see. But, you know, typically this is one of my downfalls is I always would grow, like I'd hit it and I'd say this is great and I would just stick with it. And I prefer a smaller cucumber. But yeah. I'm going to grow both. I'm not going to grow the Boston pickling, and we might have those next year if I can put them back on the on the table. But, you know.
It's a classic slicer.
It is.
Right? You know, the straight eight is a classic slicer.
It is.
You know, and again, one of the things that a lot of us appreciate about summertime salads and things.
But, I mean, the thing is with those two is you can, and I agree with you, do a little bit of both. Because the roly-polies, ever since I did that wood mulch, I mean, it's just been a nightmare. And you can keep them in the wings. The same with the squash. So you start another one. Because if you let one cucumber on a vine go overripe, it will stop producing altogether. And this is where, you know, because invariably when you start getting a lot, you're going to miss a cucumber. It's just going to happen. And it will definitely slow down the production, if not stop it. So keeping them going. But I've always read, and I'm curious, do you do this when you put the seeds in the ground? Do you mound them like they suggest?
So I do not. And I'm hoping that my grandmother, God rest her soul, is closing her ears if she's listening to this radio show. One of my fond memories, it's fond now in hindsight, for my very first garden that my grandparents helped me plant. And by help me, I mean my grandfather was down in the dirt with me. My grandmother was on the porch dictating, you know, planting instructions. And she continued to tell me, you know, the mound isn't high enough for my cucumbers. So, you know, in the first couple of years I did. And then because I was focused more on vertical gardening in the future years, you know, I stopped mounding them. And the mound is, you know, I think much more traditional when you're growing them along the ground.
You think so? I've never even heard of anybody.
Cucumber to sit up higher, so the entire vine isn't on the ground. That's the theory, I think.
I've never heard of anybody growing them on the ground ever. I'm sure there's a listener out there that's like, I do it, but I've never heard of it.
I mean, you think 50 years ago people were growing cucumbers vertically?
I reckon. I don't know. I mean, I really, because, you know, my grandfather, I mean, it wasn't 50 years ago, but it was 30 years ago. God, I hate I said that out loud. He was growing them on trellises, you know, but I mound them slightly. And the only reason why is because I want to give it support to get up to that first rung on the trellis. That's the only reason why. But last year I did transplants for the first time because I kind of, you know, I had the roly-poly issues and I was pretty happy with the outcome of it. But I also went back and in between each one did seeds in case and then I could thin. So, I mean, that's the benefit of getting plenty of seeds. You know, a lot of people will say put 3 seeds in a mound as well. I never did that either because if you let 3 seeds in a mound go, good night. They're going to choke each other out and you're just going to have a hot mess. And when it comes time to like pickle pickle worms and stuff like that, it's a nightmare to find them.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I can't say with 100% certainty that it's effective every time, but I put, like, you know, I plant some of these things, even transplanting some of these things, and I put a little, like, a necktie or, like, you know, basically a little bitty piece of, like, seed starting sale around the plant. So basically I'll put, like, let's say you have a six pack and you cut this, each of the six pieces out, and then I cut the bottom out of it, and I create this little funnel, I guess is a better way to describe it. Drop the seeds inside. So I plant the funnel inside the soil, drop the seeds inside of it. The idea is it helps once that seed emerges to give it a little bit of protection. Yeah. Now bugs are going to crawl around it and up through it, but it seems to have helped depending on what time of year I'm doing it in. I'd love to hear if y'all are doing something similar. You know, you've heard, like, the idea of putting foil and things around plants. I haven't done that much.
I haven't done it either.
But
it's too much of a pain.
It's, yeah, yeah. Keep it up with it when you think about the volume you're managing. So, yeah, that's a way. At least it makes me feel like I'm doing something proactive.
Yeah, I mean, I have a hard enough time making myself a tinfoil hat. I don't want to do it for my plants, you know?
Turtleneck. That's the thing I was trying to get to.
Yeah, you said it.
Like, creates a little turtleneck.
You said necktie, and I thought for a second you were, like, legit tying a tie on, like, a fashion statement. I don't really know what was going on. But, so there's one on the list that I was going to say next, but I am going to leave it for Batavia because that's the kind of guy I am.
Appreciate it.
Yep, you're welcome. But I'm going to lump two together, and it's going to be melons. So we've got Heart of Gold cantaloupes and Crimson Sweet watermelons. Now, this Crimson Sweet watermelon that we have is that's the watermelon that I got at 2 50-pound watermelons 1 year. And then the next year I got like 2 20-pound watermelons off of them without giving them a lot of space. Mm-hmm. But those really, I feel like it's the same thing where you can start them a little bit early, but I've always just direct sowed them and haven't really had an issue. But that's because we get so warm. Mm-hmm. I think if you don't get real warm, it's probably worth direct sowing them or starting them just a couple weeks early to get them going. But you really don't want to disturb the roots. Where I've gone wrong in the past, especially last year, is I tried to squeeze watermelons in a corner of a bed, and it just wasn't enough space. I don't think it was enough space for the roots. So this year, the plan is to give them plenty of space. I may only start in a 3x6 bed that we're going to use two plants and just give them plenty of space for them to grow and just take over. And we're really going to try and, you know, my son wants to grow them and it's his bed and that's his decision. So we're going to try and get him a good sized watermelon this year at all costs. So, but those are really good to direct sow that you sow them later in the season. So I wouldn't say, okay, my last frost is up and go. You really want the soil to be a little bit warmer and then they will germinate in a matter of days.
Yeah, they're quick germinators. I've struggled with watermelons in particular, and in part it's my late planting for some of these things. Melons in general, I should say. I've had really good years.
You've had some good years.
Yeah, and I've had some years where I've struggled, and I feel like it all goes back to the timing. Like, you know, I'll get to June and I'll still be direct sowing, you know, and I look at it and say, like, my season for hot weather is pretty short.
Yeah.
You know, all things considered. So that's another one where it's going to be, you know, I'm coming out of the gate with transplants for me in my space. So if you've had luck doing whatever you've been doing in the past, keep on doing it. If you've struggled, maybe consider a combination of, again, direct sowing and creating transplants as a backup. Maybe switch over to transplants. It's up to you. But just know that, you know, when it comes to some of these plants, and especially in my small space, I have to decide, like, how few I'm going to plant, not how many, right? You know, so I'm this year doing, like, three melons. So cantaloupe, watermelon, and then I'm going to give the mango melon one more try because, gosh, it's one of the best melons I've ever had. So we have the cantaloupe, we have the watermelon. And that's, again, because my space is pretty limited. And this is going to be like a plant per, meaning like I'm going to let one plant live as I kind of get plants either direct sowed or transplanted. I just don't have enough space to really allow for much more.
Yeah. One thing I will say about watermelons, though, if you don't want a really big watermelon, it's not one of those that you can harvest early. You got, that's my sweet potato slips. I just started Batavia. They exploded overnight. There was one sweet potato slip the day before. I just sent her a picture of what I'm looking at right now. There was one slip that started 4 days ago, and now look what's there. It's crazy. But, you know, you start that, and if you want a smaller watermelon, you do need to get a smaller variety, because you can't be like, oh, well, this is the size I want. It has to ripen to its desired size that it predetermines, not you. You have really no say in it. But that being said, the decision to go with watermelon, because I grew last year, I grew sugar babies, and I wasn't impressed with the production, because I'm like, if I'm going to get two or three watermelons off of a vine, I'd rather get two or three decent sized ones. So that was where we sat with it. But, you know, it's same with the cantaloupes, but cantaloupes are generally similar sized. I haven't seen a giant cantaloupe variety. Have you?
I haven't seen a giant cantaloupe variety. And they are one of the ones that I like a lot. Well, I mean, some people are very particular about, like, they just don't care for that kind of musky, I guess is the way it is, it's described. I love them. You know, I have core memories tied to cantaloupes. And you know when they're ripe. There's no questioning. There's no thumping of it. There's no, you know, looking at the tentacles. You will smell cantaloupes when they're ripe, right? You know, so that's actually a, you know, as we kind of think about the different sensories we're trying to tap into when we're in the garden, that's a pretty sweet one. Somebody stop me.
Just stop. Stop. And then there's a, there was something else about cantaloupes. Oh, one thing too about cantaloupe or cantaloupes and melons. If you get blossom end rot, a lot of times it's a calcium deficiency in your garden. And so what I did 1 year is I was able, I actually found, I can't find it again. I need to look for it. I haven't had this issue, but if I did, there's a spray that you can spray on there to inject calcium into the plant. And to my surprise, it actually corrected that issue. Didn't correct the plant, the fruit that already had it, but I just clipped it off, and then the plant was able to produce another fruit that had it. So you can try that as well. But it's really good for direct sowing. And again, it's those big seeds. Mound them up. They say mound them. And I imagine it's just to kind of direct those vines away from the plant so it doesn't just curl up right there. I've never trellised a melon. I'm not really interested. And the only reason why is because I don't really want to hammock a 50-pound melon.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
or 20-pound melon or 5-pound. I'm just not really interested in that because the stem is really small. So I can just envision like watching this melon and then coming out the next day and it's cracked on the ground. And I'd be really upset.
Now, I've done the hammocking of melons. I've grown them only vertically, and I've not had your 50-pound watermelon, so there is that. But I've had some pretty sizable, you know, honeydews and some other melons, and, you know, the hammocking has worked successfully. There is that kind of, it does create a little bit of nervousness around it. I'm actually considering in the next couple of years, and we've, it almost feels like a sad day, but it's the right thing to do. As we've talked about kind of my step down from the quantity of tomatoes that I'm growing in these future years, I'm thinking about using the cage baby for kind of more traditional growing of some of these melons, giving them kind of room to crawl.
I have a picture of the 50-pound watermelon, and my wife won't let me post it because she doesn't like her hair. So there is that. I will show you Batavia, but you know, if mama's mad, ain't nobody happy. So definitely, but it was a big one. I'm trying to find it. I'm not going to do it right now. I'll do it later.
Who took the picture?
I took the picture, but she didn't like her hair. She didn't like her haircut.
Well, I mean, I think that there's one of those things that, you know, as you looked and saw, you know, the picture, you didn't think that. Anyway, all right,
I mean, you know, I don't have any hair, so I don't really know how it goes. I mean,
so I do want to make a public service announcement.
Uh-oh.
A part of what we've done with this kind of seed collection is we're challenging you as a gardener in a way, because the ones that we've walked through so far, like, they come just generally with their own sets of challenges, right? You know, a lot of you all have grown these over the years. You know, if you go back to the cucumbers, sometimes you'll get powdery mildew. You have any number of bugs that come with, you know, cucumbers. I, for the most part, have had no issues with bugs, but I definitely get powdery mildew towards the end of the season. We just walk through some of the struggles when it comes to melons and, you know, blossom end rot and things. You know, squash, we know, again, is the bane of our existence. But we added these seeds. One, we trust that you all kind of know some of the challenges and we'll continue to work through them. But we added these seeds to the shop because they are like classics in our gardens.
Yeah.
You know, and they're worth the fight. The only thing that may not be worth the fight for me is green zucchini. I'm just going to keep it real, son. You know, every year I make the threat, you know,
I thought until I got it. And then until I figured out planting it early, and it was, it totally changed my perspective on it completely.
Yeah. Yeah. I am going to carve out, because I want to give it one more go, some space in ground to grow in ground in some of my raised beds to grow zucchini. I've been growing them in the last couple of years, playing around with containers. And you know, I'm a container lover. But yeah, I know that it's going to perform the best for me in my space inside of a raised bed. And the only reason why I have, over the last couple of years, leaned more so on containers is because they will take up a lot of space.
Yeah.
You know, as far as your traditional squash, again, one of the exceptions being the early white bush scallop, because again, grows more upright.
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you just mentioned those, because I had an issue on the last show. We were talking about containers, and I didn't know what I was going to plant, because I like to plant certain things in there, but I think because I did nightshades in there last year, I'll probably end up doing squash in them again this year. So I'm glad you brought that up. It just kind of triggered that in my head. Funny how that works. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think this is the one you say for me.
Yeah.
So sweet. One of my favorite things, and I haven't quite gotten the quantity yet, is fresh beans from the garden. That's, so green beans from the garden.
That wasn't
is
it.
Is that not the one?
That's not the one.
Okay. Well, listen, I'm taking this one. Fresh green beans from the garden. And, oh, I know which one. Yeah. And being able to just saute them real quick, right? You know, so I've, over the last couple of years, started canning green beans. And I grew up on canned green beans. So, you know, it's not that big of a deal. Canned green beans and potatoes is good eating, you know. But my preference, the best tasting green beans are going to be just a quick, you know, saute.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the closest I can get to fresh. And so we really wanted to make sure. And we actually did some arm wrestling over which one.
Yeah, we did.
And yeah, and what type, because you know, you have pole beans and you have bush beans. And so we settled on the contender bush bean as a green bean for this year. I have this plant plotted all over my garden space. The one thing I do like, because the lifespan of a bush green bean is shorter, the plant, than a pole green bean, but the pole beans take so long to produce. I'm doing both in my garden this year. I do feel like the bush green beans can be a plug and play. It can fill a hole if that's what you want to do. And it's a little bit easier on you as a gardener when it comes to harvesting from a bush plant versus something that's vertical.
Yeah.
And again, I'm assuming that if you're growing a pole bean, you're probably going to try to grow it vertically.
Well, that's why we did the bush beans. And I do want to make a note here. If you've purchased a seed starting chart from me, I put on there a lot of times that you can start beans regularly throughout the summer. And I'm referring to bush beans because they are just a great gap filler. I mean, if there is a plant that is the easiest to grow and legit takes one square foot, it is a bush bean. And the only downside I have with bush beans is they're a pain in the ass to, excuse me, a pain in the butt. Wow, my bad. To harvest, because you got to bend over. You know, I like to stand up and pick, you know, stuff like that. But that's the only issue I have. But yeah, you can keep sowing those all summer long. It is totally. And I know if you've listened to the show for a while, you said, well, you said you're going to write them off. And I did write them off until I needed to plug stuff. And I was like, you know what? It's just not worth it to write them off. Like, I need to come back to it. And you can get, I would venture to say, honestly, in the same space as if you did like an 8-foot row and you just did a pole beans and an 8-foot row of bush beans, you'd be pretty close to the same amount of beans you could harvest. Because they fill up with beans too. So, and I know the contenders are a good one.
Yeah, and this is, while it's not a summer plant, lettuce is one of those, and we have lettuce in the shop. Lettuce is one of those that I like, and this is where Young Ben and I differ. I like to plant them on the edge of my garden beds, so the edge that's facing me. A lot of my garden beds, I can only get two from one side. So I like to plant them on the edge, and lettuce is a great plant to pull out and then drop a, you know, bush bean seed in, right? Because I find for me, and I'm always kind of crouched down when it comes to my garden spaces, so kind of the bending down isn't that big of a deal for me, at least now in my tender 40s, yeah. You know, another handful of years, you know, I may change my mind. But it's an easy plant to kind of drop in the seed for. It germinates quickly. I'm actually still enamored after all of these years when a bean seed germinates, like just the look of it. And it's probably, I mean, there are probably a handful that I truly feel are suited for succession sowing. I think a lot of it just sounds good. Like, oh yeah, you can plant this on. These are one of them. But just like cucumbers, did we mention this? Yeah. You got to stay on top of harvest.
The window is shorter
yeah. when it comes to how long that plant will produce from a bush bean perspective, but you still, it could be even shorter if you're not staying on top of harvesting. Beans kind of mean summer to me. Beans, yeah. Tomatoes, and cucumbers are ones that kind of really mean summer for me.
Well, you know what the big difference is for me? It's not only is it mean summer, but you know, when it comes to cucumbers and beans, the next one, it's all going to be daily harvests. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I think that's the part that gets people really into the garden is like that. I got to get out there today and I got to harvest. Every day you're going out there and you're harvesting something versus right now you harvest once a week. You know, for me, it's like once a week, maybe twice a week I'm harvesting, but it's not a daily occurrence. But in the summertime, it's constant. It's always, you got to go. And I think that's the part that's really attractive to growing the beans and stuff like that. So
I do want to comment, a throwback to one of the listener questions last year. I'm almost certain that beans were a good example, you know, so like the ins and odds when the garden really starts to produce in the summer, you only have a handful of this and a handful of that, you know, and so beans, again, you know, throw a few as a aside for one or two people based on what you harvest. But my answer to it, almost always, I feel silly saying it, but almost always is plant more.
Yeah.
You know, so if you have trouble with, oh, I don't feel like I have enough to do the thing with, right? Whether you're canning these beans, whether you even just want it for a family size of four, you know, as a side dish, you know, chances are you're going to need to plant more, you know, more than you have been, more than you think you need. And that's a special note. If you're a real fan of them, there should be planting more just to get more, you know, if you're a real fan of beans. Every time in the summer when I see people in the grocery store, I see my elders in the grocery store, like looking through green beans. And I just, you know, I don't know how old those green beans are in the store, but I know they're not as fresh as the ones in my garden. So
you want to talk about an intro into canning, though? Green beans, the plethora of harvest that you can get is just, it's really what will rocket fire you into canning. And it's a great vegetable. It's easy to do. One of the easiest to do. And you can kind of get started. And the thing about it is it produces a taste that we all know. We all know what a canned green bean tastes like. And so that's one good thing about it.
It got me over the hump out of my nervousness for pressure canning.
Yeah.
It was the first thing I pressure canned a few years ago. And just like with anything else, once I did it, I was kind of like, oh, you know, not that big of a deal. Obviously, there's some safety measures that you want to ensure you're taking, right? You know, but I just, you know, my canner didn't explode.
Yeah.
You know, there's no lawsuit against the, you know, the canning manufacturer because it blew up my kitchen. None of that happened. And again, it's one of those things. I'm still torn, though. I haven't had a chance to do like the true comparison. It's also a easy thing to freeze from a preservation standpoint.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm not sure if I prefer freezing it to canned green beans, only because the freezing of, like, if you blanch the green beans, for a lot of us that do, you know, drop them in some boiling water, you know, for I don't know the exact time frame, so don't quote me, for like a minute or two, then put them in an ice bath, then go ahead and get them in the freezer, that's closer to a fresh green bean in my mind.
Yeah,
you know, the taste and all. But anywho, I guess the world is yours.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before in the show, but my canned green beans are the first solid food my son ever ate. We started canning them that year. We ate a batch to make sure we weren't going to die, and then he was off to the races, you know? And that's just kind of where we sat. And it was just because it was so easy. But the other one, and I don't want to hang on green beans for too long, and I was planning to leave this for Batavia, but clearly, she wanted to talk about something else.
The screen was further down. I couldn't see it in the list. You know?
It's okra. So we have a Clemson spineless okra on there. And truth be told, we talked about this. I'm not sold on any okra in particular. We wanted to find one that was a producer. Mm-hmm. And that was the one that I think you had grown mostly.
Yeah. I've grown it like year over year.
Yeah. And so I've grown like green velvet okra, and that was in the running. But this one seemed to mature a little bit slower than the green velvet. So this is one that direct sowing when it's hot, it's great, grows fast. I mean, I put one plant in one year and I pulled out a tree, literally a 3-inch diameter plant, 9 feet tall. It's so much okra that I could not keep up with it. And so it's such a great plant to grow. You can start it inside. It's another one of those I would not give it a long time, though, because it's going to grow fast, but it really likes the heat. So that's kind of where, you know, we went with that one. Now, I will have to say, when I do go up to Batavia's house one day, I don't know if I'll be eating her okra that she cooks because she likes the slimy part and I don't. Mm-hmm. So there is that aspect. I just kind of said that so she knew not to make me any okra. That's not my jam at all.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So timing is important. If you're not like in one of the southern areas in the U.S. where hot is like, you know, most of your life in the summer. If you've ever seen my garden over at Be Better Garden on YouTube or Instagram. So I have one of those traditional kind of, you know, cookie cutter homes, right? You know, single family home. And, you know, you walk in, it's 25 feet by 125 feet. So small lot. And I have used nearly every square inch that I can, every square foot. And so one year, very intentionally, I planted okra right inside this little bitty bed I have in front of my front porch. And I was harvesting okra standing on my front porch, which is, it's pretty cool and convenient, right? One of those things, again, where if you've grown it before, you already know. If you're new to growing it, you got to stay on top of it. I'm still not 100% convinced that you miss a cucumber and then that plant's done, but you miss a couple of okra and that plant's about done.
Yeah.
You know, so you really want to stay on top of it. It's worth its weight. The number of plants you need. It's probably minimum. You know, most families could probably go with one, maybe two plants at most. I have a couple of people that I gift okra to when my okra does well. So I typically plant a little bit more. I think it's a super interesting plant as far as the way it grows. It's a part of the hibiscus family. And so it puts on beautiful flowers for a split second. And when I've pulled them up, they are similar to root-wise sunflowers. Like, that root is huge, right? You know, when you pull them up at the end of the year. So yeah, and just a quick note, kind of counter to what we're doing here from a seed shop standpoint. If your plants can fully mature, and then once you get to the end of the season and the seeds are drying on the plant, like the seed pods are actually drying on the plant, you can save those seeds.
Yeah.
I never have a chance to save my seeds because I don't have enough season for that plant to completely mature, stop producing the seeds to dry on the plant. That's what needs to happen for the okra. But yeah, winter chicken dinner. Again, a part of this arm wrestle was, we know this is not one that everyone enjoys, but Young Ben lets me win every now and
well,
again.
Well, more often than you would think. you know, there's you got to branch out, and you got to look at different ways. You know, I know somebody who said that they, when they cook chili, they love to put zucchini and okra in it. Never thought about it. Put it in there. It was amazing. You know,
chili?
Yeah, chili. You know, gumbo, stuff like that, you know, soups, anything like that, like, you know, depending on how much you use and stuff like that. But that's, you know, once you start growing these things, you do learn. And I have a very touching interview on camera, and I think I'm going to just try and put something together with it where a guy was talking about his dad growing okra and what he did with it. Man, it was so touching. And I mean, spoiler alert, to the point to where that was the only crop he grew. So he could donate it to people because he could bring trash bags every week to his church to give people. And he would just bring it all the time. So he had nothing but a garden of okra every year until he was like 90 or something like that. Just constantly growing okra over and over. And he would just give it to everybody. And nobody would buy it. The store stopped selling it when the town was small because he would give it to everybody and they wouldn't even buy it at the store. So it's just one of those things. And all of these plants, you can save the seeds from, all that stuff. But the good thing about okra is you don't need a lot of seeds. You don't need to put three seeds in. You can literally put one, if you want to be safe, two in. And, I mean, it's off to the races. So, and the flowers are pretty. I've actually got a time lapse of one of them blooming. I've got to try and find. I'll post somewhere. But all that stuff is super cool. So real quick, before we move on to the others, I do need to take a second and tell you about the Planter app. It's our sponsor, as you know, and we love it. And I just got a message the other day from the creator of things to pass along to our wonderful listeners. So the Planter app is a beautiful, beautiful app that you use to plan your gardens, a drag and drop interface, square foot style. You can have multiple plans. He's also added in gardens can be archived and then reordered. So you can order them any way you want. Newly created gardens will show up at the top of your list. And so this is really important because you can have every year's garden in there and follow your crop rotation plan by revisiting. But now it will put them at the top of the list so you automatically know where your garden is. And then he's added animated sun icons and two more sun options. And I don't know what this is about. I'm imagining that it is for tracking the sun on your garden. I don't know, though. Or actually, I take that back. They're adding a lot of flowers in, too. So they've got somebody working on flowers, so that could be for that. So make sure you check that out. There's a link below that will get you a hefty discount on all of his plans, even the lifetime plan. And you can use this on your phone, your tablet, or your computer. It's available in the Apple or Google Play Store, and it is called the Planter, the Planter app. And I have to spell it because sometimes I slur my words. Thank you. The last one that we have in the shop that's good for direct sowing is basil. We do Genovese basil. In my mind, basil is basil. I did find out last year that purple basil doesn't bolt as fast. But the benefit of the bolting basil, I know a lot of people are concerned about pollinators. And I found out last year that the pollen inside of the basil it supports the bee colonies because it gives them the right protein to raise their young. And it blooms in a time when there is nothing else blooming. So that is a really good addition. You can pre-start it early. Super easy to start early. I took it 1 year and I dumped a whole pack of seeds in a cup. And then the cup had, I don't know, probably 1,000 in there. And I pulled it up and I just ripped out chunks and put them in pots. And I had so many, it was ridiculous. So you can do all of that, but it's a really good, and I mean, it's basil, man. It's a standard, you know?
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I may just be, there may be a little bit of an exaggeration here, but so I'm going to say maybe. Basil may be the best value as far as return on your investment compared to what you'd purchase in the store.
Yeah.
So that includes if you purchase a plant from the store, you know, if you're purchasing kind of that packaged basil, so easy to grow.
Yeah.
Right. And so much, it produces so much. I had basil actually, I ended up planting around, I had started indoors, which is a whole different story. Let me just say I put transplants in, I think it was at the end of August. And you know how I talk about, oh, you know, there's so few days that it's hot, you know. Put transplants in at the end of August. I had that basil in my garden up until the last frost. I did some funky things to try to expand it. But you can absolutely, again, if you're doing succession sowing, you can absolutely have basil in your garden all year long. I have some now in the cabinet that is dry basil. I took some of pesto that I made with my basil last year out because I'm going to roast some potatoes and drizzle some pesto on it. I didn't eat before we started this, so that's all I've really been able to think about. But yeah, it's one of those things. I'll be honest, I don't know that I believe that basil loves tomatoes, but everyone says that they do, and I've never had any issues planting basil and tomatoes.
Yeah.
And even when it bolts, you know, pollinators love it.
They love it, love it, love it. Yeah, the only thing I'd say about that is if you do basil, depends on what you use it. I always grow more than I use. I mean, and I don't like it dried, so I just make a bunch of pesto, and I usually make it every other year. So last year, because of the purple basil wasn't as prolific, we just kind of moved on, and this year we'll do the Genovese again. So it's a beautiful addition to the garden. So that's all of the seeds that we're selling that are direct sowed, but the reason why we're talking about those is because that's what you direct sow in fall. So it's not been a giant summer. It's not been a giant commercial. This is legit what you grow. So, you know, if you want to direct sow, you can definitely do that. We do need to do our question of the day. So we're going to start with, I've got two here.
Well, we are going to do the serious one after we did the fun one.
We got a bunch of serious ones. That's all we got for right now. I'm going to go with this one. So because of the timing, can you give some alternate ways of hardening off? I'm gone for most of the day. I leave when it's cold and get home almost at dark. Is there another way to harden off plants if I'm not at home? And this is from Gregory. So,
hey, Gregory.
There you go.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Batavia? Can you give another way?
So Gregory, and I'll just ask, and I'll push back Leonard, any notes of potentially replying with some sexist comment. How long does it take you, Gregory, to get ready for, you know, leaving for the day? So if you are up and let's say it takes you an hour from the point you rise to the point you walk out of the door, you know, very first thing that you do when you're starting off, the initial moments of hardening off is put those seedlings outside, you know, and then pull them back in when you are ready to leave and get out the door. I do know that that doesn't work for everyone because sometimes our mornings are really jam packed with things, but that's a thought.
Yeah, it's, it depends on your schedule. I mean, you know, if you work a 9-to-5, I'm trying to think. I know how I do it, and I don't have to baby my hardening off process, but I was trying to think if there's something to add to that. I could see the same thing. Or like putting them out in the evening, stuff like that. You know, if you can get home at lunch, obviously that will help as well. Mm-hmm. What I do is, even though I am here, I don't want to babysit them. So I've figured out on my, around my house, areas that get progressively more and more sunlight. So yep. The first day I put them out, zero sun, all shade, 100%. And then I just, each day I just kind of move it so it gets a little bit more and a little bit more. Using umbrellas can work. You know, if you put an umbrella over the top, like you set it under like a picnic table with an umbrella on it or something, then you're going to naturally eliminate the harshest sun of the day. So after a couple of days, that would be a good option. One thing I did this year is I started putting it out in the afternoon. So I did that at one point where it was too cold to put them in my other spot and I wanted to be able to bring them in. So I'd put them outside an hour before sunset. And then the next day, 2, maybe 3 hours before. So I did that. You can, you know, rearrange and adjust as needed. So, you know, thinking outside the box other than just bringing them in and out, because that's really, I mean, hardening off process is a huge pain.
Yeah, which is the reason why, you know, ideally we direct sow as much as we can. But I am doing more starting indoor. So, I mean, maybe do as I say and not as I do. I cheat the system. Like, I bend the rules. I took some kale and collard green plants out. Like, what's today? Monday. I think I took them out on, it's been pretty warm here, on Saturday. Brought them back in and put them out on Sunday. And they're still out there. So again, the weather is unseasonably warm here. I took a couple of notes. They're not completely out there in the elements. So I had a little Tupperware container that I basically have them sitting inside of. And the intention is, you know, I'm more concerned about them getting too warm than I am like the elements attacking them. When it comes to traditional hardening them off, like taking your full plant outside, there's a spot on my deck directly outside of my kitchen door that almost is always shaded. So I'll leave them out there. I have a little table, you know, like it's not like it's like one of those, you know, tables that you have that sits kind of low outside. I'll put them underneath that table. So all they're getting really exposed to, there's a little bit of sun that comes through at some point during the day, but it's more of like the air, the outside air. Right. Depending on what time of year it is, I may even put some on the side of my house where, you know, during the early spring, it's very little. Like, again, remember I told you about the sizes of our lots here. Very little sun creeps through because the houses are so close together. So, I mean, I think it's picking and choosing from some of those bits and pieces. That, you know, is a little bit more convenient and conducive to your setup. It could be starting hardening off on a Saturday and Sunday.
Just
to get the
it,
most of that exposure.
Just
right?
took it you out know? Of my mouth.
And again, this is just assuming that whatever your 2 days of off are from work, if you're off 2 days. If it's 1 day a week, that's fine too. Like a day that you're going to be closer to home, start off and try to get the most of that exposure that day. You know,
I'm mad play that around you took that from bit. Me. I thought I was being clever. But no, seriously, like, let's say you have Saturday and Sunday off. You start Friday night, you get home, mm-hmm. take them out, get them put right in the sun Friday night when you get home. Let's say you get home at 5 o'clock. All the sun they can get. Saturday, you put them out in the morning, and by the third day, you should be able to, like I said, put them under an umbrella or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it misses the noon heat. But yeah, that's a really good way. I forgot that people have days off, you know, because I don't really get a day off. But what I do is all of this. So, but that really works well, you know, any kind of long weekend, stuff like that. There's all kinds of timings that you can figure out around the work around your schedule. And I mean, truth be told, sometimes you may have to sacrifice something, you know. Mm-hmm. You may have to come home if it's possible at lunch and move them or something. But after about 3 days, you're pretty good as long as it's not like crazy hot or something.
Yeah. I personally wouldn't put them in that sun on that first day. But I'd start, like you said, Friday after work. Again, whatever that last day of work is until, you know, what your days off are. But I'd probably leave them out there for a few hours if I found a shady spot versus, you know, how, you know, the hard and fast rules seem to be like 15 minutes that first time.
No.
And then also back your way up, right? Like, were you running fans inside, you know, or are these complete virgin plants to like any type of movement? You know, if you're running fans inside, you'd likely have a stronger seedling going outside. So, you know, play around with it, be prepared for potentially some loss. Keep an eye on, young Ben hasn't struggled with this, but I struggle with this. Keep an eye on, you know, how well watered those seedlings are. There's some that you do want to starve a little bit, but there are others like, you know, shoot, you walk away 5 or 6 hours and they may be dried up, you know. So, I mean, that's more like 5 or 6 days for me. I'll look up.
Yeah. Well, I want to be very clear about my Friday sun schedule, because what you said made me feel like you didn't quite hear me right. Is in the afternoon when that sun's setting, that is not bright sun. So you can put it out there for the, I did it this year because I was trying to harden off my broccoli and I had a small window where the weather was about right to where I could leave them outside. And I did that. And the sun is so low that it's actually not that big a deal. And I mean, you can do something as easy as that Friday, put them out in total shade like you did. But then in the afternoon, give them that last hour of really low light and then to kind of speed up that process. Because typically I take 7 days of harden off, and this year I tried to get it down to about 5. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty comfortable with the 5 that I've figured out. And it was just introducing that afternoon light and stuff like that when it's low, because when that sun's straight up at noon, that's some harsh sun that nobody wants to be around. So just be careful of that. But that should get you started. And if you're not aware of what hardening off is, and you're like, what the hell are they talking about? It's when you take your seedlings from outside or from inside that you've started and you start introducing them to the outside elements. And if you put them out in the sun too soon, it will burn them. It's one of the number one ways other than overwatering and underwatering to kill a plant. And so basically you'd have 6 to 8 weeks of seedling growth looking beautiful, and then within a matter of hours you've killed them completely. So this is a process of nursing them to get outside.
Yeah, and other elements, you know, Sue, we had like 40 mile an hour winds here, you know, a few days ago, or downpours of rain, you know. So this also keep in mind as a last note for me, once you start the clock, it's not like you can't get those things back inside, you know, if you have really, really unideal weather, you know. So it doesn't have to be 7 straight days or 5 straight days.
Bring them back in. I mean, yeah. Protect your plants at all costs. I will tell you this, your plant, and you can take this to the bank and you can cash it and get 50% interest. Your plant will live with multiple days with zero light, but it will not live with too harsh of a light all at once or too cold. So you just remember that. You could stick it in a dark closet and pull it out and be just fine 2 days later. Please remember that. So, that's hardening off. Great question, Gregory. I think that's and it's something that I think we overlook from time to time too, because some people are on time constraints. And you know, the whole thing of a 9-to-5 job is like a thing of the past. Most people are like 7 to whatever, you know. So it's like, I'm leaving in the dark and coming home in the dark. What do I do?
Yeah.
So use your time to your best. But look, check out our store. I made the code so it's 1 million any way you put it. 10% off, free pack of seeds for every order, all the way up until
first day of summer.
Thank you. Had a brain fart. Become a subscriber. Check out all of our links, all that good stuff. Batavia's at Be Better Garden on YouTube. I'm Sandy Bottom Homestead. And Facebook, Backyard Community Gardens. And remember, we're going to continue to learn to grow and grow for change.
See ya.
Now you know why people feel like celebrating at harvest time.
All over the world, people have feasting and good times when the crops have been gathered in.
Thanks for checking out the show. If you like what we're doing and you'd like to support us, you can become a patron at patreon.com/backyardgardens, or you can be an Apple subscriber. And in both of those, you'll get an extra episode every month. You can also make a one-time PayPal donation with the link below. And you can get all kinds of gardening gear like t-shirts and mugs and cups from the link below at Teespring. And we have an Amazon store which has all the products that we use and recommend in our gardens, and it helps support our show. And we also add to this list periodically, so be sure to check it out periodically to see if there's anything that you need for your garden. Everything that you do, including a like and a subscribe and even a review, will help us learn to grow and grow for change.
See ya.